Pod of the Chats podcast on for Thursday, June 9th at 9:37, and on with us this morning. Excited. We love talking about movies and television and all things entertainment. And this morning, catching up with Christopher Zaleski, which I love because he and I share the same first name. Chris, this is going to be an easy interview. I feel like I'm talking to myself.
I did that for you, Chris.
So you sat down, you negotiated with your parents on your date of birth, and you're just like, listen, man.
Yep, I knew this day would come. Absolutely.
You never know. So the project is called Theirs is the Kingdom, and excited. Chris, it is so cool having you on this morning. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. So Theirs is the Kingdom. It sounds like you have been busy. So let's get to know you a little bit. Can I assume that in your background, your history, because you are directing and making films and all that, I have to believe you have always been a creative type.
Yeah, you know, I got into filmmaking from the world of journalism, though. I never really thought that I would be a filmmaker. I always wanted to be a writer and a newspaper reporter. And I did that for a number of years and just kind of got into film because it was, for a number of reasons. There's not really one good one that I could say this is the moment. But so my journey to filmmaking was not quite the traditional journey. I came at it from more of a journalism side of things.
Uh-huh. What got into you? You're just like, oh, okay, so we talked about this. Let's go do that.
So when I graduated from college, I got some jobs at newspapers. I worked at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I worked at the Roanoke Times in Roanoke, Virginia. And I think because I was the youngest person around, they said like, oh, you know how to do online stuff. Here, you could be... You could be our multimedia person. And so the cool thing with that, So the cool thing with that though, is that I was able to try out a bunch of new tricks and gadgets and things. And I got more into video, and documentary filmmaking because they wanted that on their websites, the newspapers did. And so I'd been doing that for a little bit and I kind of realized like, well, there's only so much you can do with that in under a newspaper, you know, at least at that time. I think now that's changed a little bit. But so then I said, I want to do this more seriously from a filmmaking standpoint, not under the umbrella of a newspaper. And so I went back to graduate school to get a filmmaking degree. Like I said, that wasn't my background, so I had to learn a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's how it kind of started. And so that was about 12 and a half years ago that I went back to school. And so since then I've worked in all forms of documentary, for nonprofits, independent film projects, for bigger teams, and just kind of, you know, got really into that world.
Well, it's cool because I'm looking over your bio here. And so you're an award-winning documentary filmmaker, journalist, assistant professor at Wake Forest University Documentary Film Program. And you just mentioned about St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the Roanoke Times, and then you segued. Your creative work has earned recognition from numerous organizations, including Online News Association and the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, and also screened at festivals worldwide and film. Wagon Masters was acquired by PBS, Amazon, and Canopy. So I can spend all day just reading your bio, and that would be the end of the show.
You don't have to do that, I promise.
Okay, all right. So let's talk about it. We have Theirs is the Kingdom. How did you first get connected? So you have Haywood Street and the Fresco. Where are we going with all this?
Yeah, so I was living in Asheville at the time, and it was actually a subject of mine from a previous film. She reached out and she told me about this church downtown that I was familiar with, but I hadn't really been there too many times. But she told me about this church downtown that was trying to paint a fresco mural in the sanctuary in its sanctuary. And so I was kind of interested in that. There had been originally a funding controversy surrounding the fresco. And I thought like, oh, let me see what this whole thing's about. And so I went, the pastor of the church, Brian Combs, he was having this public talk back to kind of address the funding controversy. And within the first 10 minutes of hearing him talk, I realized that the film was much bigger than just this small blip. And he just was just so powerful, the things that he said and what the fresco meant to him and what it meant to the church. And so what started is like, you know, maybe this was about some controversy, which is just a little tiny blip in the film, ends up being a much bigger story about the theology of this church, the people who are depicted in the fresco, and just the art making process of what goes into making a fresco. And so It kind of snowballed a little bit, like most films.
As a filmmaker, do you sit down and do you primarily make films and documentaries for just the Christian audience? Or do you consider, you know what, I want to figure out a way to bring in mainstream exposure too?
Yeah, I mean, this is the first film I've ever made that would be tailored toward a Christian audience, actually. That most of my films have been kind of driven by the story itself. I mean, I've made films about alternative housing. I made films about station wagons. When I was approached to make this film, it was thinking about what was the most authentic way to tell this story. And I don't think there was a way to tell the story of this fresco without talking about how this church kind of sees itself within the mainstream Christian world and also within this region of the country, and how, you know, it uses God's word to reach out to those among us on the margins, and how this fresco is a representation of that, a physical representation. And so from where I stood, it was like, you know, I wanted to do justice to the story and to this church. And there was no way to do that with going, you know, trying to not talk about that, you know, because maybe I wouldn't attract a wider general audience. And that actually hasn't been the case. This film has done really well for a general audience, and it's done really well for a Christian audience. And I think that speaks to, you know, the power of this story. No matter whether you're a person of faith or not, I think there's a lot of really powerful themes in this fresco that speak to people.
We're on right now with Christopher Zelisky, trying to figure this thing out because you're a filmmaker, but you're also a professor, aren't you?
I am. Yeah, I actually teach filmmaking. So it's you know, it does both there.
And you find time for both? That's impressive.
Yeah, you know, certain years are busier than others. The good thing is that my quote research is creative research. So I'm expected to go out and make films. I love making films. I love the whole process of meeting new people and filming and editing, and the whole process I really enjoy. And so, yeah, there are certain years that are busier than others. I'm coming off of pretty busy 2 years with this film for sure.
And on top of that, you've got the added pressure, because if you teach what you do, if it doesn't match what you're teaching, it better be golden.
Point, that's a good point. I don't let that one stress me out as much, but that I'm happy you brought that up.
Now you're always going to be conscious of it. Sorry, Christopher.
No, you're fine.
Okay. All right. I'm with Christopher Zelisky, and the project is called Theirs is a Kingdom. And so where do we find this right now?
Well, it's streaming. It's streaming on most major platforms. It's streaming on Amazon Prime, on Apple TV, on Google Play, you could rent it on YouTube. You know, if you go to theirsisthekingdomfilm.com, I have a list of all the places it's streaming. Or if you just Google it, you could find places to watch it. So it's been streaming now and widely available for, you know, a number of weeks now. And so, yeah, we're excited. We've, you know, like I said earlier, we've been really encouraged by the response that we've heard from folks. And so, I'm happy to keep spreading the word of this church, of this fresco, and this film. But probably the easiest way would be just to Google search it.
There you go.
There's the kingdom. Yep.
Which is cool to find out, because you said it's pretty much available on all the major platforms. You mentioned Amazon. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, YouTube. And so also in the letters from the filmmaker, you wrote that listening to other stories has really kind of changed your mindset and how you approach filmmaking.
Well, so this film was different from others that I had done in the past, in that, you know, I mentioned earlier my journalism background. I'm used to having, you know, a list of questions, like what's the goal of this filming session? Like, you know, I want to have a sense of what I'm trying to capture before I go into something. This film was different in that, you know, I followed the process of the creation of the fresco, which fresco murals are really rare, you know, by today's standards. When I say fresco, you're probably thinking of like Da Vinci's The Last Supper or the Sistine Chapel. And so it's an art form that isn't practiced anymore, and it's a slower art form. So I would sit down with this artist, Christopher Holt, who was the artist who painted the fresco, and he would be sketching a lot of the models from life. And so he would be sitting in a room with them for hours, and I would just sit there with my camera and hear their stories. I mean, these are people who are, you know, depicted in the fresco who are battling homelessness or addiction or mental illness, or some of them are battling all three of those things. And so it did kind of change, you know, my mindset to filmmaking, and that you don't always have to have this this perfectly outlined plan. I mean, I think a lot of documentary filmmaking especially is just human relationships, you know, being with people and gaining trust. And I think that once you do that, people are going to open up to you and share some, you know, really amazing stories and really, you know, sad stories and hopeful stories and everything. And so the film contains all of that, but the beauty and the magic of filmmaking, especially documentary filmmaking, is a lot of that just kind of comes out of nowhere. I mean, it really does. Like, I sat with these folks and just said, tell me your story. How did you get here? And 3 hours later, we would have the, you know, really amazing conversation. And so that was a really powerful experience for me as a filmmaker, but also personally.
When you think of Fresco, you tend to think of, like, you know, you mentioned The Last Supper and you mentioned a few other things that you would expect to see in other parts of the world, like across the pond, they would say.
Yeah.
This one's in Asheville, North Carolina. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. And actually, you know, happy you brought that up. Western North Carolina actually has a pretty rich history of contemporary frescoes. I mean, there's been, you know, over 10 painted in the last 25 years in Western North Carolina because of a kind of a movement there. This isn't in the film, but I've heard it said to me that there's been more frescoes painted in Western North Carolina in the last 30 years than anywhere else in the world. And so it is interesting. And the film does cover kind of that legacy. And the main artist that kind of started this movement is a guy named Ben Long, and he's in the film. And Christopher's kind of a protege of Ben's. And so, yeah, it is kind of interesting. I mean, even people in Western North Carolina don't really know much about the history of it. So it's, you know, I feel fortunate to be able to kind of tell that story.
That is cool. As I also want to mention yet too, because Fresco, it's like a natural pigment and it's blended with plaster. It's kind of porous, isn't it, when you look at the painting itself?
Yeah, I mean, the fresco, the plaster that's set up for the fresco has to be breathable. But when you look at the painting, it's not like there's holes or anything in the painting. It's just most of that breathing happens actually underneath the fresco.
Mm-hmm.
But really what makes fresco so unique, and this gets to kind of the symbolism of this artwork, is that you're painting into a wet lime plaster. And so the painting is becoming stone. You're not painting oil on a canvas that sits on the surface. The paint is actually being sucked into the stone.
Wow.
And so there's a real permanence there. There's a real symbolism there. And for this piece of art, you know, specifically, where you're not depicting a traditional biblical scene, you're painting real people in this community who are battling homelessness and addiction and, you know, mental illness and poverty. You're taking people who are otherwise unseen in society. And you're not just putting them on a painting, you're putting them in stone. I mean, there's a real permanence and a symbolism to that. And that was some of the things that really sucked me in from the beginning. And that idea of what it means to actually see somebody, what it means to see another human being, that's really what I wanted to get across in this film. And that's what I think the art does so wonderfully. I mean, this is 30 feet long by, you know, 10 feet tall. And it's a big, big mural. And you're confronted with people that on a daily basis, most people avert their eyes to. So what does that mean? You know, yeah. And so that's kind of the point of the film. And that's certainly what the point of the fresco was.
Did you find it tricky from time to time sitting down and trying to figure out a way to attack this project? Because there was a certain, you wanted it to come out a certain way.
Yeah. And that's all, you know, there's a part of the editing process that's you know, in every film I've worked on and most filmmakers that I work with talk about this part, that you just feel lost. You feel hopeless. Oh. You don't know how you're going to get to the end. You start questioning the project. And this film had some of that. I think the biggest challenge for this film is that there's three very different storylines. There's the story of the art being made. There's the story of all of the models who are depicted in the fresco. There's about 30 of them that are depicted in the actual fresco. 11 of them are featured in the film. So it's balancing their stories. And then there's also the Christian element. There's the why of this. Why is this significant? Why is it a significant piece of art for the church? But why? What does it represent on a larger scale? And so a lot of that is told through Reverend Brian Combs in his interviews. And so, yeah, I mean, trying to figure out a way to blend together those three storylines was difficult. You know, in every iteration of the film, I think maybe leaned more on one or another. And so it was a process of trying to strike a balance. And there's not a good way to say how to do that. It's just a really time consuming process.
Wow.
it requires trying to incorporate people from, you know, outside the filmmaking process to get their opinion. And a big part of this film too is that I wanted Haywood Street to feel represented accurately. So I wanted them to chime in on cuts to let me know, like, hey, you know, what am I missing here? What, how would you have said this? Am I cutting out something that you think would be an important thing to include? And so all of that's part of the process. It was probably, I mean, the very last filming session was March 5th, 2020, which, you know, we had no idea what was going to happen a week later, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so most of the editing took place in the 9 months of 2020. And then it premiered in early 2021 at film festivals. And so the editing process probably took like 9 or 10 months. And that's just, you know, that's actually a pretty fast editing process, to be honest with you. But it just requires you to sit with the material and wrap your head around it and, you know, hopefully include others that are going to give you honest feedback about what's working and what isn't.
Was it harder for you to give equal time to each story, or did you find yourself drawn to any one story over the others?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want it to be like, all right, we gave 2 minutes to Jeanette, we got to give 2 minutes to Jerry, 2 minutes to Dave. I mean, so different. Some models are on screen for longer than others. Some models come back by the end of the film. Other models don't. It more for me was about, you know, what are they saying? What was their story? And making sure that it wasn't redundant. Like, what are they symbolizing that is different from another person's story? If everybody's saying the same thing, it doesn't really matter that you're seeing different people. Hmm. And so it's more about, you know, what is this person, what is this person saying about the experience of homelessness or the experience of addiction, or the experience of being unseen that is different from others? And how can we kind of structure that in the film? So it wasn't necessarily about runtime. I mean, one of the more powerful scenes of the film is a guy named Thomas who talks about the fact that he's dying of AIDS. And he's only on screen for about a minute and a half, but it's a really powerful scene because he wears his emotion on his face. And there's other folks later on in the film, like Jerry, who's kind of the last model you meet, who has this really, you know, powerful story of abuse and growing up and how he ended up being homeless. And his story is really difficult to listen to. And I felt like that needed to be later on in the film because you had to really be invested in the journey at that point, because I didn't want it to scare people away. And so there was all those little decisions that, you know, honestly, I probably blocked out most of why something was done or, you know, whatever it might have been. But all of that is more about the content, I guess, than trying to fit like a runtime requirement or making sure everything is balanced and fair, you know. Yeah.
Well, it's a great idea, and the fact that so many stories are represented through this fresco painting, and you put a film together to kind of capsulize all of that. Where, again, can we find it, and where can we find on social media?
Yeah, definitely. So theirs is the film, excuse me, theirs is the kingdom. I can't botch my own web address. That's not theirs is the kingdom film.com. That's going to give all the streaming platforms. But really, if you just search theirs is the kingdom movie, documentary, film, like, you're going to find it on Amazon, Google Play, Apple TV, YouTube. If you have Roku, just search it on there. You could find it probably on Amazon Prime and other streaming platforms that are attached to your Roku or whatever, you know, smart TV service you use. Yeah, theirs is the kingdom. You just look it up, you'll find it. And then most of our social media is on Instagram, which is just at theirs is the kingdom. And we put updates on there when new streaming services open up or if there's news about the film. And so, you can connect with us on there.
Christopher Zelisky, is awesome catching up with you this morning and getting a chance to understand your film and learn more about it. Now that we know about you, the next project, you're a professor. It's got to be golden. You know that.
Yeah, it has to be good. The pressure's on.
Award winning. Keep it going.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you too, Christopher. Have a great afternoon. We'll catch up with you again soon.